Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. The show provides practical general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get notebook, paper, and a pen so you can take notes during the show. As always, we first look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. From MarketScan, Honda rides into red territory by Tina Wang. The market expected the global recession to decimate Japanese automakers' profits, but few expected their second-half losses to be so huge. Now the question is whether whopping output and capital spending cuts will even allow them to break even next year. Honda Motor looks on course to post an operating loss in the second half to the tune of at least 120 billion yen, which is $1.4 billion, on the severe demand slump and surge in the value of the yen. This would be the company's first half-year operating loss in over a decade. Japanese automakers are scrutinizing all their pipeline investments for possible delays or cancellation, slashing output and jobs, and looking to wrangle price cuts from steelmakers and other suppliers. Last week, Honda Motor slashed its full-year operating profit forecast by 67% in the third such guidance cut this year. It estimates earnings for the year ending March 31st to come in at 180 billion yen, which is $2 billion, down from a previous guidance of 550 billion yen, or $6.2 billion. The forecast earnings represent an 81% plunge from last year. It also signifies a larger than expected loss in the second half, since Honda posted a first half operating profit of 302.9 billion yen or $3.4 billion. We see no sign of recovery, Honda President Takeo Fukui said at a press conference. Honda shares fell 108 yen, $1.22 or 5.5% to 1,865 yen or $21.09 in Tokyo trading last week. The magnitude was quite a bit bigger than anyone was looking for, said Christopher Richter, Tokyo-based analyst for CLSA. This does not bode very well for the next fiscal year. Midweek, the Nikkei reported that Honda would slash its guidance to 300 billion yen, which is $3.4 billion, which was already below Wall Street expectations. Instead, Honda predicted just over half that. Honda said it expected sales to have fallen 13% for the year because of a collapse in demand from the US and European markets. The yen's surge to decade highs against the dollar and euro has dealt a further devastating blow to Japanese exporters by eroding their overseas earnings. Honda said it would cut its dividend to 11 yen, which is 12 cents per share, for the October-December period, down from 22 yen or 25 cents. We're not expecting any of the makers to meet the forecasts they set after the first half, Richter said. I don't think we're done with bad news from automakers. Earlier this month, Goldman Sachs expected Toyota Motors to post a second-half loss of 374 billion yen, or $4.2 billion, as the bank cut its full-year operating profit forecast to 208 billion yen, $2.4 billion, down from its $7.1 billion amount. Nissan Motors will reportedly cut output by an additional 78,000 vehicles starting in January for the year ending in March and shed up to 500 temporary workers. Over on the federal market, the Federal Open Market Committee decided today to establish a target range for the federal funds rate of 0 to 1/4%. Since the committee's last meeting, labor market conditions have deteriorated, and the available data indicate that consumer spending, business investment, and industrial production have declined. Financial markets remain quite strained and credit conditions tight. Overall, the outlook for economic activity has weakened further. Meanwhile, inflationary pressures have diminished appreciably. In light of the declines in the prices of energy and other commodities and the weaker prospects for economic activity, the committee expects inflation to moderate further in coming quarters. The Federal Reserve will employ all available tools to promote the resumption of sustainable economic growth and to preserve price stability. In particular, the committee anticipates that weak economic conditions are likely to warrant exceptionally low levels of the federal fund rate for some time. The focus of the committee's policy going forward will be to support the functioning of financial markets and stimulate the economy through open market operations and other measures that sustain the size of the Federal Reserve balance sheet at a high level. As previously announced, over the next few quarters, the Federal Reserve will purchase large quantities of agency debt and mortgage-backed securities to provide support to the mortgage and housing markets, and it stands ready to expand its purchases of agency debt and mortgage-backed securities as conditions warrant. The committee is also evaluating the potential benefits of purchasing longer-term Treasury securities. Early next year, the Federal Reserve will also implement the Termed Asset-Backed Securities Loan Facility to facilitate the extension of credit to households and small businesses. The Federal Reserve will continue to consider ways of using its balance sheet to further support credit markets and economic activity. And finally, from the New York Times, for investors, trust lost and money too. The zoning lawyer in Miami trusted him because his father had dealt profitably with him for decades. The officers of a little charity in Massachusetts respected him and relied on his advice. Wealthy men like J. Ezra Merkin, the chairman of GMAC, Fred Wilpon, the principal owner of the New York Mets, and Norman Brayman, who owned the Philadelphia Eagles, simply appreciated the steady returns he produced, regardless of market conditions. But these clients of Bernard L. Madoff had this in common. They chose him to oversee much of their personal wealth, and now they fear they have lost it. For Stephen J. Helfman, a lawyer in Miami whose father had opened an account with Mr. Madoff more than 30 years ago, the news on Thursday last week came as a hammer blow. The name Madoff has overnight gone from being revered to reviled in the Helfman family, Mr. Helfman said. My grandmother, at 98, relied on her Madoff money to pay for around-the-clock care, he said, and his two children's college funds were wiped out. Mr. Merkin, a prominent philanthropist and the founder of several hedge funds, including one called Ascot Partners, jolted his clients on Thursday with a letter announcing that substantially all of the fund's $1.8 billion in assets were invested with Mr. Madoff. From the Independent, Superwoman stung by hedge fund guru's $50 billion trading scam. In London, the most startling confession came from Nicola Horlick, probably the most famous British fund manager, known as Superwoman, for balancing her high-flying finance career with bringing up five children. Her fund, Bramdian Alternatives, had almost 10% of its assets, about £10 million, invested with Mr. Madoff, money Miss Herlick admitted yesterday she was uncertain she would ever see again. Bramdian shares lost a third of their value. And from the Wall Street Journal, fund fraud hits big names. Giant French bank BNP Paribas, Tokyo-based Nomura Holdings Inc., and Neuve Private Bank in Zurich are also exposed, according to people familiar with the matter. And at least three funds of hedge funds, which raise money from investors and farm it out to hedge funds, may have significant losses. Fairfield Greenwich Group and Tremont Capital Management of New York place hundreds of millions of their investors' dollars into funds overseen by Mr. Madoff. Friday last week, Maxim Capital Management, LLC, reported a combined loss of $280 million on funds they had invested with Mr. Madoff. "I'm wiped out," said Sandra Mansky, Maxim's founder and chairman. The Darien, Connecticut fund of hedge funds will have to close as a result of the losses, she said. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. And for the second segment of the show, I will review some of the points that we went over last week in this program, which is currently dealing with how to budget your monthly income, your net income, to make sure that you can get out of debt, stay out of debt, and have some wealth down the road. As is always, an important credit for this show is made. The thoughts, ideas, examples used in these programs are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Emilian Warren Tyagi, two of America's leading champions for debtors, and I highly recommend their books, All Your Worth and The Two Income Trap. You can also go to the archives at www.kruufm.com and look at Life and Debt to listen to all of the past shows to get a complete picture of what we have been discussing and what we will discuss today and the basis for today's ideas. What I had been talking about in the last few weeks is the fourth stage of your savings. And this is after essentially you have set yourself up and paid off your debt, except for the major debt like your mortgage payment. You create a retirement fund we discussed from this fourth stage. You save for paying off your home, adding to the pay down of the principal each month with the 20% that you have allocated to your savings each month. You've taken about 10%, putting it into your retirement, about 5% to pay down the principal of your mortgage, and then you have approximately 5% left over to deal with funding your other dreams in life, which we talked about extensively last week. And what I discussed was how to follow very simple guidelines, which are not only simple, but quite powerful, to invest this 5% of your disposable monthly income in a long-term investment plan. And what we concluded is that, in fact, the first thing you want to do is to put money into stock. Even though we're looking at some challenges in the stock market right now, the stock market historically and statistically is the single best place for long-term investing, and that means 5 years, 10 years or more, and you will get a very high rate of return, 10 to 12% over those periods of time. And obviously this is much better than you're going to get in your savings account kinds of investments. And it's not the unbelievable kinds of investments that are sometimes made in these short-term investment proposals, even on the stock market and day trading kinds of things. This we're looking at least 5 years of investment. And even with this, you can put your retirement fund into it. If your kids are really young and you have a college fund for them, that money can go into it. And any money that you plan to put aside for more than 5 years should go into this stock investment fund. So that was the first point. And then the second point was you need to do a little bit of diversification. In fact, a lot of diversification. You should try a little bit of everything. And this is very important. It is the major rule of this kind of long-term investing. Diversify, diversify, and then diversify. You buy some of nearly every kind of stock area listed on the market. And the reason for this is the long-term balancing reality that can and does happen if certain things go bad. You're also going to have things that are going right in all of your total investment picture. So it does even out. And in fact, it doesn't just even it out. It puts you generally in a positive gain in the overall picture over time. So 10-12%, you will definitely see that you will be in the black here, even though some things are going to go south, as they say. And even though the stock market is in some general challenged conditions right now, as I had mentioned before, it's well known that during the Depression, there were millionaires made because many of these kinds of companies can and will transcend the psychology that creates a plummet in the markets. So the assets are still there and the human energy power is still there and the creativity is still there, so they will rebound eventually. Not a bad time to take some diverse stock purchasing approach. And then the third point that I raised was to be frugal, which means pay as little overhead as possible. This is a really important point. In fact, it's a point that I use in my personal business, my bankruptcy business. I'm dealing with people who hardly have any money to even pay for a bankruptcy, and it's important to me to try to make it as inexpensive for them as possible. One of the ways to deal with that is to reduce overhead and to be, in nowadays kinds of thinking, we have a virtual kind of office and technological setup, so many things can be reduced for people's costs. And the same thing here is true for yourself. When you're in the business of buying stock, you do not need to pay hefty brokerage fees and a host of other charges, because that really takes money and huge bites out of your nest egg. What you want to do is to shop around yourself. With a little careful shopping, you can get nice low fees on buying the stocks. And today, with the internet and the markets online, you could do this without even really leaving your home. And then the fourth thing, which I introduced last week, and it really is going to be the bulk of what we discussed today, is to do it all with one-stop shopping. Now, what we discussed was the index fund. Now, an index fund is also known as an indexed mutual fund, which buys from hundreds of different companies, so you get instant, really no-hassle kind of diversification. The stocks are purchased according to a preset formula, so you don't blow a bunch of money paying some high-priced specialist to sit around and dream about the next big stock. What happens is that the index funds just buy a little bit of stock from all the different companies listed on the stock market and then sits back and lets the money grow. As Professor Warren says, that the index fund is essentially the Honda Civic of the investment world. Unfortunately, we just read that the Honda Civic is having challenges earlier on in today's show. However, it is generally, as far as the car is concerned, a good, reliable vehicle that can get most people where they want to go. And just like that, we will see with index funds, it's the same kind of analogous result. The overhead fees on the index fund are typically much smaller than they are for the fancier investments, so it lets you stretch your dollar as far as possible. And the best part is that the index funds outperforms roughly 70 to 80% of all other stock funds. That means that your index fund will do better than the vast majority of brokers on Wall Street. And right now, with the picture of what's happening on Wall Street, it's going to be doing a lot better than 80%. It might be 99%. And of course, that's just my opinion with a twist of cynicism in it, having worked for a firm on Wall Street myself, a bankruptcy law firm on Wall Street myself. I am quite aware of what happens down there, and we are all learning more and more about it through the media these days. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So back to index funds. If you want a really good bet and you don't want to spend a lot of time shopping or you don't have a lot of knowledge to shop, index funds are right for you. And even the self-made billionaire Warren Buffett said himself that the best way to own common stocks is through an indexed mutual fund. The legendary stock picker and vice chairman of Fidelity, Peter Lynch, said most individual investors would be better off in an indexed mutual fund. Charles Schwab, founder of Charles Schwab Corporation and one of the 400 richest people in America, said, "Most of the mutual fund investments I have are index funds." And from an anonymous writer in Fortune magazine, he said, "By day, we write about 6 funds to buy now, but by night, we invest in sensible index funds. Unfortunately, pro-index fund stories don't sell magazines, but the truth is they can make money for you," which is the whole purpose of this program, this plan, the budget, and having a comfortable, healthy, happy, and prosperous future. The next question is, how do you choose an index fund? Well, you look for an index fund that has the lowest annual fees and includes a lot of different stocks. Really, the most popular index fund, which you can see in the papers and probably heard a lot about, is Standard & Poor's 500 Index, which includes stocks from the 500 largest companies in America, sometimes just called the 500 Index. Together, these firms make up about 70% of the value of the entire U.S. stock market, and you would just get a nice broad place, or piece, I should say, of the biggest companies in America. If you want more diversification, but it will have a little bit higher fees, you might consider a total stock market index fund, which includes virtually the entire stock market, or 5,000 or so companies. And you can also opt for an index if you really, and particularly in today's world, global market and conditions, a stock market that includes stocks of companies based outside the U.S., which would give you the most possible diversification. And then the next question comes up, where should you buy an index fund? Well, index funds are essentially all the same, so just choose the place that will give you the lowest possible overhead fees, less cost for you. Find an index fund through your retirement plan or a standalone investment. If you're shopping on your own, discount brokerages are a good place to start, and you can find one of those online. And as I said, just hunt for the lowest fees. If you get a retirement plan through your job, which you may, then you can choose from the list of investment options that your employer gives you. If there is an index fund on the list, sign up for it. If there is no index fund on the list, look for the most diversified, lowest cost mutual fund that you can find, which is really the best way to replicate the benefits of an indexed fund. And then, of course, ask your boss to add an index fund for next year. Then the next thing is, well, can I just keep my money in the bank? And I've discussed this before. A lot of people have a squeamishness about getting in the stock market. And if you consider just an example of someone who earns about $50,000 a year and diligently puts 20% of his or her paycheck into an index fund, which is the amount of money that we're talking about in terms of your disposable monthly income for savings, in 25 years, that person would have nearly $1 million. However, if he or she put it into a savings account, he would earn about 3%, she would earn about 3%, and at the end of 25 years would have about $210,000, which of course is simple math, almost an $800,000 loss. So it really isn't very wise to not get into a conservative long-term investment that pays an income return which is 4 or possibly even 5 times as much as that amount she or he would get in a bank account. And then, as I've mentioned many times in this program and in other programs, what do I do when the stock market crashes? And it is really all over the news. The Dow Jones is falling, the market is crashing, and in fact, some brokers are really jumping out of windows. And what should you do? Well, the concept is to do nothing. And the reason why you would do nothing is because it would actually be the biggest mistake you can make to sell when the market starts to drop. You don't want to do that. What you want to do is just to ride it out. These are long-term investments. When the market is dropping, if you get on a roller coaster ride, you will get less money for your sales and you will miss out on the gains when the market rebounds. So this is a long haul kind of procedure and investment, and it's the smartest economic kind of strategy that you can put together. And you just need to get out of the psychological roller coastering that brokers deal with every day. You don't even have to look at how your stocks are doing except periodically. All you have to do is keep it there, and you will see over time that in fact you will have a lot of returns, 10 to 12% returns in 10 years or 15 years or 20 years. Huge amounts of money will come back to you. And as Professor Warren says, that the investment strategies here are devised by really the smartest economists and Nobel laureates in the world, and you just have years and years and years before you're going to need that money based on the overall plan that we've been putting out. It means that there will be ups and downs in the stock market for years and years, but when you sit tight and keep on investing, you will see that over time you will be in the black by far. And next week we will continue to look at other ways to build your dreams a little at a time once you've reached the fourth stage of savings. And the final tip for the week is be careful of checking account advance offers. They're claiming that there are cash solutions when you need cash for a lot less. For example, U.S. Bank is currently offering such a checking account advance. They're claiming it's convenient. If you're making direct deposits, you don't even have to apply for this kind of option. And it's flexible. You borrow only what you need, from $20 up to $500 anytime, day or night. And it's easy. You can make an advance online at, for example, usbank.com. And then the final click is that it is affordable. You pay only $2, they claim, for every $20 you borrow, which may be substantially less than other short-term lenders. However, just think of the math. $20 you're borrowing, you're paying $2. If you look at the fine print, that's a fee of $2 for every $20 borrowed, corresponding to an APR, an annual percentage rate, of 120%. This is a kind of a payday loan from a company like U.S. Bank. Stay away from these kinds of offers and you'll be a lot better off. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, you can call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and happy, prosperous, debt-manageable life. You are listening to the open source sounds of Wicked All Stars. The song is Jazz House from the album Dark Clouds, available from Magnatune. Thank you.